Please call the case.
Case number SCAP-13-2266, Sierra Club v. D.R. Horton Schuler Homes, LLC. Arguing for petitioner, Eric A. Seitz. Also appearing for petitioner, Sarah R. Devine. Arguing for respondent, Office of Planning, Brian C. Yee, Deputy Attorney General. Arguing for respondent, Department of Planning and Permitting, Don S. Kitaoka, Deputy Corporation Counsel. Arguing for respondent, D.R. Horton Schuler Homes, LLC, Gregory W. Kugel. Also appearing for respondent, D.R. Horton Schuler Homes, LLC, Matthew T. Evans. Appearing for respondent, Land Use Commission, Diane Erickson, Deputy Attorney General. Argument on the merits.
Good morning to all our counsel this morning. Are you all ready to proceed? All right. Mr. Seitz, you'll be going first and reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning with 10 minutes to go. Then my understanding, we'll be hearing next from Mr. Kugel for 15 minutes, Mr. Kitaoka for 5, and then Mr. Yee for the remaining 10 minutes. And we'll have warning lights at each point when you've used up your time. So please proceed, Mr. Seitz. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. My name, as you know, is Eric Seitz, and I represent the petitioners in this case. Before proceeding, I'd like to acknowledge the presence of my clients, former Senator Clayton Hee, and on behalf of the Sierra Club, Anthony Alto, who is present here this morning. As well, I'd like to acknowledge my associate, Sarah Devine, who did the bulk of the work on this case, without which we probably would not be here this morning. The land at issue in this case was characterized by witness after witness who appeared before the Land Use Commission as the best and most productive agricultural land in Hawaii and possibly in the entire United States. Due to the favorable combination of excellent soil, available water, good drainage, warm and sunny weather, this agricultural land at Ho'opili provides the highest crop yields in the state of Hawaii. Witnesses testified that this land is irreplaceable. The food crops grown there represent from 40 to 70% of those crops that are currently produced in the state of Hawaii. At the time of the Land Use Commission hearings, the subject land represented 32% of all land on Oahu in edible crop production and 13% statewide. Its loss will deprive the people of Hawaii of nearly one-third of the edible food grown and consumed in this state.
Mr. Seitz, what is your response to the finding by the commission that there are alternate lands available or appear to be available, albeit with some doubt about the water availability? What's your position on that, and are those findings supported by the record?
They are not. Even the witnesses who provided that testimony on behalf of the petitioners, Mr. Plath and Russell Kokoban, stated that although there is other land zoned agriculture, none of that land has the current infrastructure or any track record of productivity to be able to substitute for the lands that are at issue in this case. And indeed, even if those lands were provided with infrastructure, which Mr. Kokoban said there simply is no funding at this point to provide, then those lands still do not substitute for the productivity of the lands at issue here. As I said, the testimony was undisputed that these are the best agricultural lands, the most productive agricultural lands in Hawaii, and there is no substitute for them. So in fact, the answer to that question, based upon the record before the Land Use Commission, is that finding was 100% wrong. There is, yes, we can see other land that's zoned for agriculture, but it has no record of productivity and no capacity to substitute for the land that will be taken for this development. If the court reads just simply the language of the 11th Amendment to the Hawaii Constitution and the policies that are explicitly stated by the legislature in seeking to implement that provision, it is frankly inconceivable that any state entity could vote to destroy this land and take it out of agricultural production. It is on the face of the Constitution and the statute, the policies contained in the statute, a clear violation of law. And yet, the Land Use Commission was not concerned. They basically voted without undergoing, we submit, the process that was required of them. Now, again, as I said earlier in our argument a month or so ago, we don't dispute the need for housing, nor do we dispute the need that is set forth in the state plan for both housing and agriculture. But the mandate of the Land Use Commission is to properly balance those needs and to come up with plans and determinations and findings that implement both goals and both needs. And in this case, the Land Use Commission knew, because there was ample evidence, that there are already in excess of 40,000 potential places where houses have already been permitted, 40,000 units in Eva, in that side of the island, generally speaking, within a few miles of the land that is sought to be developed here. We don't need this particular land to be developed to meet the objective of providing additional housing, and the disastrous consequence of destroying this agricultural land is something that is just simply inconceivable. Unlike the Coal Ridge case, which I argued before you last month, this case is one in which the developers and their representatives consistently have misrepresented and outright lied to the Land Use Commission, government agencies, the public, and this court on critical aspects of this case. They began by expounding their fantasy of what they called urban agriculture, in which they said would mitigate the loss of the land currently dedicated to commercial food production. But their urban agriculture turned out to be nothing more than optional garden plots in the backyards of future homeowners. They then proposed to set aside and reserve specific parcels of the subject land for future agricultural development. But when we inspected that land, we found that it turned out to be gullies and dry land that has never been farmed and never will. At the Land Use Commission, Horton presented testimony that people who buy homes and settle in Ho'opili will live there and work there so that the development will have little or no impact on the roads and highways into town, which already are so congested that they have been designated by the federal traffic authorities as F on a scale of A to F. But the only jobs that will be created, according to the testimony, are food service and retail positions for the places that will be built in this development. There's no indication that there will be other jobs or that there's any capacity for people to live and work in Ho'opili based upon current information in the record of this case. So the end result is that this proposed development will dump another 12 to 15,000 cars on the roads every single day.
I think I see someone on the phone in the back. If I could ask that person to shut their phone off, please. Thank you, sir. Pardon me for interrupting.
That's okay. And in addition to that, the people who work in Ho'opili at these restaurants and stores are likely to have to commute there as well. So this is not a development which is going to serve the needs of housing for people who need that housing. Most of these homes, the bulk of these homes, are so far overpriced that the people currently now in need of housing in Hawaii are never going to afford to live there and certainly are not going to work there.
Mr. Seitz, there's a conclusion on there. That's the last factual finding on the traffic, and I'm just trying to understand it. It says something like this. Even if the Honolulu Well Transit is not built or is not built until later, the neighborhoods within the project would still function better than existing suburban neighborhoods by reducing driving for short trips, by providing a healthier living environment, by being serviceable by local and regional bus traffic, and by having safer streets.
Well, Horton presented testimony that they're going to provide streets locally and connections to other communities in that area, which will be adequate to provide for people to move around safely in that area. They also indicated that they're going to provide additional lanes. They're going to build at their own expense additional lanes on the freeway up to the H2 interchange, which is where all the problems occur there and beyond into town. But that finding is not otherwise explained because it presumes that people are going to stay in this area and are going to spend their work days in the same area as well.
It sounds like there's some sort of inference that bike lanes and bikes within that community is going to address the traffic into town. And I don't see any commitment in this having anything to do with beyond the interchange. It appears that things are going to be worked out.
Well, the only commitment is to get people to the interchange in vehicles. That's the only commitment. And that is going to be a serious problem.
I'm a little bit confused. I thought this case concerned important agricultural lands. I didn't see anything in your opening brief about challenging traffic findings.
No, we have not specifically taken on the traffic issues as a basis for this. But when the Land Use Commission enters into its balancing process to determine whether or not the need for homes is reasonably outweighs the impact upon the agricultural destruction that will occur, there are certain criteria, obviously, that we think they need to consider. And all I'm saying with regard to traffic, with regard to water, with regard to drainage from this property, because they don't have a plan for that either, is that they did not engage in the balancing process here. But the fundamental misbalance, the fundamental problem that arises here, is they want to take the best possible agricultural land and turn it into houses, which we don't really need to build on this particular property. And that is the fundamental problem which we have with this case. We have policies that were implemented by the legislature in the Important Agricultural Lands Act, which I believe, whether or not these lands have been designated, tie the hands of the Land Use Commission to at least following the policies that the legislature has articulated and that the Constitutional Convention articulated as adopted by the voters in 1978. But what we have here is an utter disregard for those priorities and for those concerns. And nowhere can it be better manifested or worse for the future of this state by taking the most productive lands, and everybody agrees. There was no contrary testimony that these are the best agricultural lands in the state.
Question, Mr. Seitz.
Yes, sir.
Did you address in the opening brief anywhere a challenge to the finding of fact that alternate lands were available?
Well, yes, we did address that.
Where in the opening
brief? I think there's a whole section where we talk about the fact that the alternative lands that were proposed are not lands that have the infrastructure or the capacity to produce the crops that are now being produced. We've made that argument consistently. We made that argument before the Land Use Commission through cross-examination of the experts or supposed experts of the state. We made that argument in the circuit court in our briefs, and we made that argument as well in our brief, and I could show you the pages if you'd like me to, but that has certainly been a theme. If this were a situation where there were agricultural lands available and that somebody could simply move to those lands and set up shop and could demonstrate some degree of productivity equivalent to what we're losing at Ho'opili, we would not be here. We would not be here. That's really what this case is about, is that we're going to take, at a time when there's a growing need for agriculture in Hawaii, after all, we produce only 10% of the food that's consumed here. At a time when there is a huge consciousness among the public to expand agriculture, and we now have a track record of the viability of economic enterprises in agriculture producing food, at a time like that, we should not be taking the most productive land out of production unless we are sure that we can make other arrangements elsewhere. And there is no assurance whatsoever. Indeed, as Russell Kokoban testified and acknowledged, not only is there no land, but there is no money to provide the infrastructure for that land.
In the decision below, each one of the findings of fact were numbered. And so which findings regarding alternate lands did you identify as being either erroneous or unsupported by substantial evidence?
Well, this was the process, Judge Chang.
Well, what number? What number fact findings?
We did not identify them by number. We challenged them all. And you know, the process, we could have, I guess, provided a 600-page brief because the findings of the Land Use Commission were several hundred. They were all drafted by Horton, and the Land Use Commission just signed them with very few minor changes. We could have gone through and itemized all of them, but that was not the process that we wanted to apply here. We didn't want to pick and choose. We made it clear that we were appealing the process, the absence of proper legal standards, and the application of those legal standards to the facts that were presented, which the Land Use Commission found with respect to the destruction of agricultural land. And if you look at the standard of review, which we set forth in our brief in the circuit court, basically the standard review says, and we allege, that the court may modify or reverse an agency's findings or orders that violated applicable constitution and or statutory provisions, were made upon unlawful procedure, were affected by legal error, were clearly erroneous in view of the reliable, probative, and substantial evidence on the whole record. And we are relying on the whole record. We're not picking and choosing specific findings, and I don't believe we're obligated to do that when it is clear that we are arguing the lack of adherence to a constitutional requirement as implemented now by the statute. We're not any longer arguing Sunset Beach because Sunset Beach was essentially responded to by the legislature. We're essentially arguing here, in my view, whether or not the Land Use Commission properly balanced the need for protecting agriculturally productive lands against the need for housing. And overall, in the record of this case, it's clear to us, much more so than in any other case, that the Land Use Commission didn't care about protecting agriculture.
Were there findings by the Land Use Commission saying, well, there's really no other lands available, non-agriculture? We've looked at all the lands in the region or in the area, and there's not other available non-prime agricultural land for residential development?
I'm not sure I understand. There were findings by which they said that there are other agricultural lands available. There were no findings that said that this land is of such value that the development of this land, the need to develop this land for housing, outweighs the need for keeping it in agriculture. There was nothing like that. There was lip service to the fact that we have permitted applications for housing to be built in adjacent areas or in the same general region, but they basically did not consider that to be a factor in their decision. They essentially said and adopted every argument made by Horton and which Horton put into its findings of fact without question whatsoever, that Horton has met its burden, there is a need for housing, this housing is going to be built despite the impact on agriculture. They made also a specific finding, by the way, they said there will be no significant impact on agriculture. And so too did the trial court below make a specific finding to that effect. And in my view, that is ludicrous. Clearly there was going to be a significant impact on agriculture, and you have to be blind to be able to say so.
Hey, Mr. Seitz, following up on Justice Pollack's question, the land use statute 205.4 provides that no amendment of a land use district boundary shall be approved unless the commission finds that upon the clear preponderance of the evidence that the proposed boundary is reasonable, not violative of section 205.2 and part 3 of this chapter, which is the important agricultural lands part of the statute. Do you believe that they adequately made the findings that are required by that section? And if not, why not?
No, they did not. And we briefed that issue for them. We asked them specifically, and again, the argument comes up basically very superficially, which says, well, these are not important agricultural lands. They haven't been so classified. And we've addressed that issue by virtue of the fact that how many years have passed and the process has not gone forward. But that doesn't end the inquiry with regard to the State Land Use Commission. The State Land Use Commission is bound by the policies and by particularly the section you just read. And the State Land Use Commission, in our view, does not have the authority to simply ignore the statute and the Constitution and allow development on what are, by all available criteria in the statute, important agricultural lands. Now that leads into the issue of, well, this land is, as in Coa Ridge, is part of an urban area that's been so designated. But again, as I pointed out to you before, there is a section of the land use of the Important Agricultural Lands Act that mandates certain things for the counties to do. It says the county shall consider such and such factors in determining and mapping important agricultural lands. And it says the county does not have to apply that process to lands that are already within some sort of urban plan or urban boundaries. It doesn't say they can't do that. It says they don't have to. But the Land Use Commission has a larger duty and a larger obligation. The Land Use Commission is a state entity, and its obligation is to preserve and plan land use for the entire state for the needs of the people of the state of Hawaii. And unquestionably, under the section that you just read to me, it is our interpretation that that binds the Land Use Commission, and we told them so. And we asked them, stay your hand and tell the cities to go ahead, the counties to go ahead, and finish the mapping process, and then come back and determine whether you're going to take irreparably the best agricultural land out of production or not. Once that process has been done, if you still think you need to take Ho'opili for land, then we've got enough of a record and a basis to determine whether the balance has actually been done. But they didn't do that here.
What does the Hawaii State Plan say with respect to these lands?
The Hawaii State Plan provides equal protection, in my interpretation, to both agricultural lands and to housing. It sets out, essentially, goals to provide adequate housing for people and protection of agricultural and expansion of agricultural lands. So I don't think you can look at the Hawaii State Plan and say that one or the other is favored. But we have so disfavored agriculture since the plantations shut down. We have done so little to facilitate the growing of food in this state that it is just simply hypocritical at this point to take what is the best parcel of land and take it out of agriculture. That seems to me to be a clear violation of the state plan without the kind of balancing which the Land Use Commission ought to have engaged in. Now, bear in mind, I mean, if you look at this politically, every political administration, every governor since George Ariyoshi has come out against Ho'opili and the development of this particular land, except for Governor Abercrombie, who was in office when this took place. Every single governor, including Governor Ige, is opposed to the development of this agricultural land. And yet his representative apparently is going to stand here and misrepresent the state's position. Now, that was their position under Governor Abercrombie. But he's the only governor who's ever supported the use of this land. And then we had Russell Kokoban, who was somewhat conflicted, and I felt very sorry for Russell because as a senator, he championed agriculture. But if you read his testimony in this particular case, he testified, he was called as a witness by Horton, but on cross-examination, he was very forthcoming and very honest, and I respect him for that, because he said there really is no substitute for this land.
Mr. Seitz, you've asked for a stay in proceedings until IALs have been mapped out. Is that correct?
I did. We asked the Land Use Commission to do that, yes.
Now, under 205-47A, and I think that's what you were impliedly referring to, it directs each county to identify and map potential IALs within its jurisdiction, but it specifically excludes lands that have been designated for urban use.
Yes.
So if they aren't going to ever include them, if this county is never going to include them when they identify and map IALs, if they've been, and this property has been designated for urban use, does that mean they're asking us to, or they should never consider it?
No, it doesn't mean they should never consider it. But what it does mean is, as we argued to the Land Use Commission, that the county should be given the opportunity to go through that process. And if you recall, that started while this case was in hearings before the Land Use Commission. And during that time, the City Council passed a resolution urging that it be expedited. And at that point in time, in addition to that resolution, they passed another resolution unanimously asking for the city employees who were engaged in mapping to consider both Ho'opili and Koa Ridge.
Which resolution are you referring to when you say that that happened? Because the only resolution that we were able to find was Resolution 1223 that does not mention the
There is a correspondence in the letter, in the record of the Land Use Commission, and if you give me a second, it was dated March 13, 2012, and it was sent to the Land Use Commission by Don Kitaoka, who is sitting here, and it has the original resolution, 12-23, and then there was a second resolution urging that those other lands be considered as well.
Where does it mention Koa Ridge or Ho'opili?
I'm sorry, I'll have to go through this, but this was, I have it in front of me, but I'm not finding the general language, which was
Well, you can provide it to us in your rebuttal if that would be helpful,
sure.
Mr. Seitz.
In any event, it's our view, as I said, that that provision which in the statute which governs the city's or county's role says that they shall do certain things, but it doesn't preclude them from doing other things. And moreover, it's clear, as we talked about last time I was here, that these urban plans have to be reviewed on a regular basis. And in fact, that process is going on as well. So if a particular parcel of land is within an urban district, that's not permanent. Basically, that can be changed, as there have been changes in general in the economy and in the land use provisions that have governed the development on this particular island. And so that is under reconsideration as we speak, to take the best agricultural land out of production forever, which can never be restored, when there is at least a likelihood, in our view, that that land may very well be redesignated out of the urban district, is, in my view, an irreparable act that we ought to at least give them the opportunity to resolve.
Would you like to reserve the rest of your time
yes,
for your
please.
Rebuttal? Okay, very well. Thank you. And we'll hear now from Mr. Kugel.
Good morning, Chief Justice Rechtenwald, Justices Nakayama, McKenna, Pollack, and Judge Chang. May it please the court, my name is Greg Kugel. I represent the respondent, D.R. Horton Schuler Holmes, along with my partner, Matt Evans, sitting behind me. Also, for the record, I would represent the D.R. Horton's executives of President of the Courtroom this morning, including Bob Rule and Mike Jones. With all due respect, this case is about planning. And as Benjamin Franklin once said about planning, that he who fails to prepare prepares to fail. Well, the city and county of Honolulu, 40 years ago, took Mr. Franklin's admonition to heart, and it enacted a general plan, and it subsequently enacted and reenacted development plans covering long-range comprehensive planning for the island of Oahu that dealt with things like growth management, population, land use, capital improvements, and infrastructure. In fact, this court said 25 years ago in Kaiser Hawaii Kai Development Company versus City and County of Honolulu that the city's land use decisions and zoning decisions must always be made on the basis of a long-term comprehensive plan. Hawaii is a planning state, and we take our plans seriously. The Land Use Commission and the decision before you considered the county's long-range plans, its growth management policies. It balanced many things, including agriculture, including housing. And what it did was it concluded that it was implementing the final phase of the city's second city of Kapolei concept and the city's growth management policies that have been in place since the 1970s and reflected very important trade-offs and balancing that I'll talk about briefly. So this morning, what I wanted to tell you is several things. First, you've heard a lot about agriculture, and I intend to talk about agriculture. You've heard nothing about long-range plans. You heard nothing about the Land Use Commission's extensive findings of fact concerning the city's growth management policies, the need for housing on Oahu, in particular the need for housing in Ewa and at this particular site. And so I will cover that. I will also speak briefly about important agricultural lands and why the designation of those lands under this statute really has no application to this case. Before I get into that, though, I do just want to reiterate the standard of appeal and the posture of this case. This is a Chapter 91 administrative appeal from a contested case before the Land Use Commission. The decision and order carries with it the presumption of validity. The findings of fact are reviewed for clear error. The circuit court, when it reviewed those facts, and this court, I respectfully submit, cannot reweigh those facts, cannot second-guess the credibility determinations of the Land Use Commission. And most importantly, in the Chapter 91 appeal, an appellant has a very heavy burden of specifically identifying findings of fact and conclusions of law which they contend are erroneous. And the cases are legion, and we cite them in our brief, that the court holds appellants to that standard because it makes your job harder and makes our job harder when that's not done. That was not done in this case for the circuit court or for this court. But to the important question of why housing at Ho'opili. As the Land Use Commission found, the location of this petition area is extremely important. It is located, its northern boundary is the H1 freeway, the Malka boundary. Immediately to the east is the city and commercial district of the town of Waipahu. Also to the east, adjacent to the property, are the residential subdivisions of Hanauliuli and Westlock Estates. The southern border is made up of the residential subdivisions of Eva Villages and the Eva Villages Golf Course. Then we get to the western border. On the western border is the brand new campus of the University of Hawaii, West Oahu, and other state-owned land that is slated for development. And immediately below that, and still adjacent to the property, is the Department of Hawaiian Homeland's East Kapolei subdivision and the brand new headquarters for DHHL. And as an aside, I would mention that the land under both UH West Oahu and the DHHL is the exact same land that is at Ho'opili. Some of the tenants were previously farming for the state's land. At those locations, they're no longer there.
Well, Mr. Kugel, can you respond directly to Mr. Seitz's argument that, in fact, the record doesn't support the conclusion that there are other agricultural lands available that could accommodate or replace, accommodate the farmers or replace the lands that will be lost if this land is developed?
The Land Use Commission made extensive findings based on the libel, probative, and substantial evidence in favor. We document that in our brief, but specifically the Land Use Commission found that at several different levels, and I'll talk about at the in the nearby area, within the urban growth boundary, this petition area is located. The city, however, drew that boundary in order to protect 3,000 acres of prime agricultural land in Eva, but outside of the urban growth boundary. Also to protect 10,000 acres in central Oahu and 30,000 acres on Oahu's north shore. There was a lot of testimony, and it supports the findings of fact that there are over 30,000 acres of prime agricultural land on Oahu that are currently unfarmed. The Land Use Commission went beyond that and considered the available land also available within the entire state of Hawaii, 177,000 acres of currently unfarmed land.
Does that land have Does that land have water? Is there some uncertainty expressed about the availability of water for that land so that it actually would be usable and as productive as the land we're talking about here?
Yes, Chief Justice. There were several aspects of testimony that supported that. Bruce Plash, who was an agricultural economist, testified that not only was the Lake Wilson irrigation system being improved by the city and county at the time, which would make that water available for irrigation not only of plantation-type crops, but it would also be upgraded at the time this was going on to be able to irrigate melon and produce crops as well. Mr. Plash also testified about the development of wells, which were allowing farmers to move to the North Shore.
Doesn't the requirement, I'm taking a look at 1515-77, and when it says by allowing the, when you take out agricultural land that's been producing within the past 2 years, the commission has to find either that the action will not substantially impair actual or potential agricultural production in the vicinity of the subject property or in the county or in the state. Now, you just mentioned Waihua and the North Shore, and there's no finding regarding it being within the vicinity of the subject property.
Well, thank you, Justice Pollock. And actually, 1515-77 is stated in the disjunctive, and it requires an either-or situation. Either the Land Use Commission can find that there's not an impact on agriculture, or, and that's what I want to focus on this morning, or the Land Use Commission finds that the reclassification is reasonably necessary for urban growth. And that's the Land Use Commission.
So that's really where your focus is. I mean, there's a problem here with the vicinity. So
Well, there's not. As I mentioned, the urban growth boundary protects, as the Land Use Commission found, 3,000 acres of prime agricultural land in Eva itself.
Okay. Well, there's no finding as to vicinity. And let's talk about is reasonably necessary. Now, the first finding is that, I'm reading the entirety of the finding for reasonably necessary. This is 31. The project is necessary for urban growth as it plays a key role in the city's growth management policy established in the general plan. The general plan directs growth for the island to the primary urban center, Ewa and central Oahu, so that development pressures can be alleviated for other areas of Oahu to keep the country country. The petition area has been designated for eventual low and moderate density residential development since the adoption of the general plan. In other words, the entire reasoning is based on the general plan.
No, the entire reasoning was based on more than the general plan, although that plays...
That's the first reason.
That's the conclusion of law, Your Honor. There are approximately, well, there's 660 findings of fact that actually support why not only the general plan's direct growth out there and recognize that there was a policy decision made by the state and county planners in the 1970s to direct urban growth to the Ewa Plain, but there are a number of findings of fact about why this parcel in particular is suitable for that, aside from its designation for urban growth in the development plan.
Well, I'm trying to just go over the reasons that the Land Use Commission gave for finding reasonably necessary. So the general plan is the first reason, and I thought that the Land Use Commission certainly had greater responsibilities than relying just on the general plan. But nevertheless, this is the second reason. The commission further concludes that although full urban development of the entire petition area cannot be substantially completed within 10 years after the commission approval, reclassification of the entire petition area is reasonable, not violative of 2502.16.17, and based on its findings that the infrastructure requirements for phase 1 and 2 are integrally related. So reasonably necessary is the second reason, is because it's a big project and it can't be done within 10 years.
That conclusion actually addresses the incremental phasing requirement of the land use law that talks about when a project can't be completed in 10 years but takes longer, the Land Use Commission could either reclassify the entire property or reclassify it in segments. But I do want to direct the court to a number of findings of fact that do support the ultimate conclusions which you just read. For instance, findings of fact 622 through 644 are extensive findings of fact about Honolulu's growth management policies and plans and how this particular parcel fits into that. Findings of fact 357 through 363 and 569 are specifically addressed to the need for housing, primary resident housing, not vacation homes, not resort like you find at Ko'olina, and the need for those not only on Oahu and the growing need and the housing crisis we're in, but specifically the need for those in Ewa and on this project.
Mr. Seitz stated, and the response was this is the city and county's long-range projection. Apparently these are approved already in central Oahu and Ewa, show a number, when you add them up, there's 50,000 units. And the response of the Land Use Commission was something like I just heard, we're going to discount it because some of them are going to be vacation rentals.
Well, that number, actually, 50,000, doesn't appear in the record, Your Honor. I think it was a much different number. But the Land Use Commission looked at that and had evidence before it from Ann Buslog and others about what those unbuilt but permitted units were. And it found in Ewa, at finding of fact 359, that much of those units are secondary homes, resort and timeshare units, or restricted occupancy homes like on Hawaiian homelands. It found that they were not primary residential housing. Conversely, it expressly found that Ho'opili, and this is finding of fact 360, Ho'opili was, in fact, oriented toward the primary resident, the occupant, and 30% of that would be affordable housing, and therefore the Land Use Commission found that the Ho'opili project actually fills the unmet need that it identified in the other findings of fact I described for you.
So the secondary housing and vacation rentals, based on the calculations, means that prime agricultural land needs to be used for residential housing. That's the conclusion.
With all due respect, that's actually the conclusion that was made by both, as the Land Use Commission found, by both the state and county planners in the 1970s. It was a trade-off because at the time we were faced with Campbell Estate and the plantation lands pulling out, and there was a conscious decision, and I'm sure the other attorneys will speak to that this morning, a conscious decision to direct further urban growth in Honolulu to the Ewa Plain, knowing that that was a trade-off. But, as you said, keeping the country country, that was the second half of the general plan, and that is firmly ensconced in both the original Ewa development plan and the 2013 Ewa development plan, which was which itself redesignated this land for residential mixed use, not for agriculture, and that was after the fact. So it does reflect that conscious decision, and at the time, as the findings of fact of the Land Use Commission reflect, the planners on Oahu were concerned about urbanizing the windward side, they were concerned about urbanizing East Honolulu, they were concerned about keeping Waianae country, and so they chose to direct master plan residential communities to the Ewa Plain onto former agriculture land, but at the same time keeping significant chunks of agricultural land available for the future.
Mr. Kugel, I'll ask you the same question I asked Mr. Seitz. Did the commission make the necessary findings required under 205.4H that this land use boundary change would not be violative of Part 3 of Chapter 205?
It did, Your Honor, and it did so in several respects. I don't have the finding of fact numbers in front of me, but at several different times.
Did it explicitly make that finding?
It explicitly found that the land had not been classified, or in the proper term in the statute is identified by the counties and then designated by the Land Use Commission as important agricultural land under 205 Part 3. And there's actually a definition in 205.42 that says important agricultural lands, it doesn't exist in the very general sense. It exists in the sense that it says as identified in this part. So they have to be identified through the process that the legislature set up. And the Land Use Commission found that these parcels, or this petition area, not only had not been identified and classified pursuant to that part, but that it would never be.
So it's your position that 205.41, despite being incorporated specifically in 205.4, which says that no amendment shall be approved unless the commission finds upon clear preponderance that it's not violated of Part 3 of this chapter, which includes 205.41, which is not cited, it's your folks' position that it's inapplicable.
205.41 is the statement of policies. The remainder of the statutes in, or the sections in that part implemented, and you can't ignore 205.47A, which explicitly excludes certain land, and I would say, and that's the land that's been planned by the state or the county for urban use. This has always been, and it's not just 205.47A. It's 205.47D2, which also says that the county's mapping and identification process must be consistent with the county's adopted land use plans. You also find that in 205.44C6, which is the criteria for identifying important agricultural lands. One of the criteria, despite Mr. Seitz saying that it met all the criteria, one of those criteria is consistency with the county's community development and general plans. And again, this has never been planned by the county for anything other than residential use.
Now, can I ask you about another section? The commission concludes that it doesn't violate 205.2, and you agree that 205.2 is something that has to be complied with.
Yes.
Okay, now 205.2, one of the sections in 205.2, it talks about in the classification and of the lands, it says, in the establishment of the boundaries of agricultural districts, the greatest possible protection shall be given to those lands with a high capacity for intensive cultivation. Now, there's no dispute in this case that this is some of the best land in the state. In fact, under the findings that are given, the ratings that the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources, it's rated, 1,000 acres are rated level one, and the ALISH system, 1,300 acres. Okay, so there's no dispute about that. Can I ask you, did the LUC make any findings that it is giving the greatest possible protection to these lands?
When it applies 205.2 in its analysis, the Land Use Commission looked to the urban classification and said that it met those criteria, and I can give you some of the findings of fact why. In addition to the planning, the Land Use Commission pointed to the fact that the property was surrounded on three sides by urban district. It pointed to the fact that it was located strategically on the major transportation corridor between Kapolei and urbanized Honolulu, surrounded by major roadways, including the H1, Kualakai Parkway, Beaver Road.
So the answer to my question, really, is they never even mentioned greatest possible protection. Those words don't even appear in the findings or conclusions.
There are extensive, well, they weren't reclassifying it into the agricultural district, in which case they would have looked at the standards for ag under 205.2. In this case, it was urban, and they went through that analysis. That's in the findings of fact. But there are extensive findings of fact and conclusions of law about the impact on agriculture of this project.
Okay.
And I do want to disagree when representation was made that there was no evidence controverted that this was the best ag land in the state, and there certainly was evidence to the contrary. Bruce Clash testified that this was not the best based on historic yields, based on flooding problems. He identified specific land elsewhere in the state that would qualify as better agricultural land than this.
Well, there's a finding, I guess it's 420, and it says that Oahu had 53,000 of acres of A and B rated lands. This is certainly A or B lands, correct?
Yes.
And according to the commission, as such, and it says now there's 41,000 acres of 41,400. And it says, as such, the amount of A and B rated land that has been urbanized during the past four decades, they've only lost 11,000 or less than 22% of the 72 figure. In other words, it seems to me it's being trumpeted that we've only lost 22% of our lands, of our A and B land, which means, keeping up at that rate, there won't be any in a couple hundred years.
Well, that's actually not true, Your Honor, because what they go on to say is they explain how the urban growth boundary protects other lands from reclassification. They also talk about the 30,000 acres of prime agricultural land on Oahu that are not even being farmed today. And so it is not accurate. And I see I keep using my colleague's time.
Yeah, well, let's have you answer this question, and then we'll, by virtue of the fact we've been asking you questions, I certainly will give them some their time to be able to present, but wrap up this one.
It's important that you hear from them as well. Thank you.
But go ahead and finish responding. I'm sorry.
Well, I think I did.
All right.
Thank you.
Anything further, or is that it at this time?
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Kugel. We'll hear now from Mr. Kitaoka.
May it please the Court, Don Kitaoka, Deputy Corporation Counsel, on behalf of the Department of Planning and Permitting. Last time I was here in the Coal Ridge case, I tried to emphasize that there are separate processes for land use approvals. There's a time and place for everything. There's a separate process for IAL designation. There's a separate process for LUC reclassification. And as most important to me, there is a process for establishing the city's general plan and development plans. One thing is certain in all of these processes, is that deference is given to the county's development plans and general plan. All of these processes insist on consistency with the county development plans. The general and development plans of the city and county of Honolulu are products of a deliberative process that requires consultation with city agencies, particularized studies, public parks, participation and input and public hearings. It goes through the Planning Commission in a public process, and it goes through the City Council for review and adoption. So there are 8 community-based plans intended to guide public policy within the county. 2 of these plans are called development plans, the EVA development plans and the primary urban center development plans. And that's significant because the general plan directed growth to the EVA plain, which makes it logical that there is a development plan for the EVA plain. The rest of the development plans are called sustainable communities plans, which is basically to sustain the communities that are presently there. So this kind of policy, which directs growth to the EVA plain, inevitably requires some prime agricultural land in the EVA community inside the community growth boundary to be used for required housing, while at the same time protecting in the EVA development plan 3,000 acres of prime agricultural land. The loss of some prime agricultural land in EVA is the cost of ensuring that the rural areas in Waianae, North Shore, and Windward Side, and Central Oahu along Kuneo Road are protected against development. So the adoption of the EVA development plan and the revision in 2013 was the culmination of a lengthy review of the old plan, which was a 1997 plan, and it involved multiple opportunities for the public to comment and assess the revised plan in 2013. So there was significant outreach to the public, including public meetings, workshops, interviews, focus groups, neighborhood board presentations, over a period of many years. So this plan, the EVA development plan, is the result of incorporating and responding to comments from the public, comments from community leaders, business and labor representatives, landowners, developers, farmers, the public, and private agency. It was no small task. In fact, it was a very arduous task to revise the EVA development plan. And the result of that plan is directed growth into the EVA plain. So I would implore upon this court to not give short shrift to the county's development plan and the general plan, which basically provided the scheme for controlled development within the city and county of Honolulu. And therefore, the conclusion that should be reached by this court is that all of these processes require consistency with the county plans. And with that, I'll answer any of your questions regarding the county plans.
No questions at this time. Thank from the court. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Very quickly, deferring to my esteemed colleagues here. When you talk about the conscious decision to sacrifice some of the prime ag lands, can you give this court some sense of what percentage of the available prime ag lands in the EVA plain were determined to be subject to urban designation?
What percentage of
the available prime ag lands in the EVA plain?
Well, basically, the EVA plain, since it was designated as a development plan, the community growth boundary preserved 3,000 acres of prime agricultural land. But that wasn't the emphasis in the EVA development plan. The emphasis in the EVA development plan was to create the second city and to create the urban part of the island so that the rest of the island can be preserved. So 3,000 acres may not seem like a great amount to be preserved in the urban growth boundary, but the rest of the sustainable communities plans, including the urban growth boundary in central Oahu, shows that many more acres of prime agricultural lands are preserved in those other areas.
Would that be the 30,000 available lands that has been referred to today?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kitoka. Now we'll hear from Mr. Yee.
May it please the court, Deputy Attorney General Brian Yee, on behalf of the Office of Planning. Good morning. If I could first try to address a few of the questions that were raised today. You had asked several questions regarding alternative lands, and we join in the responses provided about the acreage that's available in other areas, the purpose of the EVA development plan, and the various other committee plans which direct growth to certain areas in order to preserve good agricultural land and other land for preservation elsewhere. It's important to remember that one of the principles of planning is to make sure that you allow for proper development where it should go in order to preserve other areas where development should not be. And if you don't allow development at all, what you tend to then see is a development creep into areas where they should not. So the worries we have are the development of agricultural areas with gentleman farms, et cetera, because we are not providing enough urban lands for development or enough good urban lands for development. We also wanted to point out that the Land Use Commission made findings of facts on this in findings of fact 428, 435, and 436 with respect to other alternative lands for the tenants. In particular, it referenced DOA Director Russell Kokobun's testimony, which says the tenants, DOA would try to make lands available for the tenants in a 150-acre ag park on Cuneo Road, a 400-acre parcel off of Kinnear Road held by DLNR, as well as the 1,700-acre Galbraith Trust lands, which were at that time in the process of being purchased and have subsequently been purchased. And it also references finding of fact 435, which says all of the lessees have, to a certain extent, replacement lands.
So why to a certain extent? Why is that good enough that it's to a certain extent?
Well, I think it's good enough given all the other facts. I also think that when you look at, I don't think the standard required is that every tenant must be able to get replacement lands for every acreage that they have currently. So I think it's part of the relevant facts that go to it, but isn't necessarily the standard by which I would say the LUC must come to an agreement. What you're looking at in the 1515-77 requirement is that whether it would affect agricultural production in the state, the county, or the vicinity, not necessarily, quite frankly, the specific tenants that are available, that are present on that particular parcel that's being reclassified. By the way, with respect to the vicinity, I think Kinnear Road, it sort of depends on what you define by vicinity, but there are two particular responses. One is, one of the aspects of this rule is to make sure that the mix of urban and agriculture are not in conflict, so that if you urbanize a certain area, then the other agricultural activities in the area are not negatively affected in that particular vicinity, and there is, in fact, condition three, which addresses that issue.
Can I ask you about 15? Well, one of the statutes that have to be complied with, that's mentioned both in the findings and the statute, is there has to be compliance with 205.17.
Yes.
And it says, in its review, it's titled Land Use Commission Decision-Making Criteria. And it says, in its review of any petition for reclassification of district boundaries pursuant to this chapter, the commission shall specifically consider the following. And number four says, the standard and criteria for the reclassification or rezoning of important agricultural lands in Section 250. That was never referenced in any of the findings or conclusions.
It was referenced, it was not specific, 205-50 was not referenced. What was referenced in the findings of the fact is that the petition area is not IAL.
So in other words, is your conclusion on this, even though the statute requires it to be specifically considered, it's your view that since they're IAL lands, that 205-50 is completely inapplicable?
Under 205-50, it only applies to IAL, is our reading of the statute.
Okay, but the statute actually sets out criteria which could be applied to non-IAL land as well.
Not under Part 3. So well, if you read Part 3, I think 205-50 is read as saying if your land is IAL, and you want to reclassify it, 205-50 sets forth the criteria for reclassification. So that's incorporated into 205-17, which is the general requirement. So if you want to reclassify lands, which is IAL, you have to look at both 205-50 and 205-17.
But it doesn't say if applicable. It just says you shall consider it, and it talks about standards and criteria. And one of the criteria is making the balance that Mr. Seitz referred to, which is never made in the findings.
Well, first of all, I think a balance is drawn in every finding under 205-16 and 205-17. Determination of conformance to the White State Plan and the consideration of the various factors under 205-17 inherently requires a balance, because these are a series of factors that the LUC must consider. So that in itself, I think, is a balance. Furthermore, I think to believe that 205-50 then applies to every single piece of property, because if one were to propose,
well, we're talking about amendments. And we're talking about amendments of districts to areas greater than 15 acres. It's not every piece of land. The statute doesn't apply.
Fair enough. What I was referring to, for every LUC decision, which are only for acres of 15 or more, which does encompass a significant number of the reclassifications, if you said 205-50 applies, then what you're essentially saying is 205-50 is applicable to every LUC reclassification. And that's not, I think, an appropriate reading of 205-50 and its placement within Part 3. And this, I think, also goes to the reference in 205-2, which also references Part 3. And that, again, I think under our reading, the requirements of Part 3 apply to ILMs. That was the whole purpose of creating Part 3, at which at the same time as you created Part 3, you created the references to Part 3 in other parts of Chapter 205.
In other words, if it's prime agricultural land and it's not IAL, it gets almost no protection.
I disagree. If you are prime land, then you have the protections provided under both 205-16, 205-17, as well as HAR, Section 15, 15-77, as well as a consideration under the county community and general plans. So the idea that prime agricultural land doesn't get consideration is incorrect. I think particularly when you consider that the urban growth boundaries are devised to protect certain prime agricultural lands, which necessarily means you have to allow development in other areas which may be very good for agricultural growth. Flat lands are good for both houses and agriculture, and sometimes there's a conflict, and that's the purpose of plans, that's the purpose of these balancing tests, to decide where that development goes, as well as where are we going to protect. Your Honor, I see.
Anything further to wrap up, Mr. Yee, at this time?
Sure. Let me just summarize then very quickly. The court has an important role to play. Obviously, it must make sure that the LUC has followed the law. It must make sure that the LUC has substantial and credible evidence for its conclusions. And I know you know this, but I just want to emphasize that the LUC also has an important role. These are 9 volunteer citizens who are uniformly successful in their fields and who've donated a substantial amount of their personal time to do this very difficult and very time-intensive work. And they work so hard to do it. And while it's certainly it's their job to use their best judgment to balance these various land use interests and to come to their best decision, and it's their responsibility to make sure this balance is drawn. And that responsibility rests with the LUC. So while you certainly exercise an important role in this process, I'm hoping that at the same time that you're exercising the role, we also ask that you give meaning to the LUC's role and their hard work, and we ask that you uphold their decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Seitz, your rebuttal.
First of all, Judge Chang, let me refer you to page 10 of our opening brief, which addresses the issue of those alternative lands that we believe, frankly, do not exist. That whole referral to 30,000 available acres of land is just simply a myth. It does not exist. And there was testimony in the record before the Land Use Commission both about the Galbraith Trust lands, possibility of Lake Wilson as a source of water that would be adequate for crops. None of that has come to fruition. That's never changed. That was all hypothetical. And there is no water yet, and there is no acreage, and there are farmers and future farmers who are clamoring for more land, and they can't find it. And so what happens is when they pave over Ho'opili, the state of Hawaii loses 1/3 of the food currently produced here. Is that not an impact? Is that not a serious impact? That's a crazy outcome. Now, let me just address a couple of other things. Justice McKenna, I'm sorry I didn't have the resolution in front of me, but let me refer you to the resolution that was passed unanimously on January 19, 2012. And what it says is it does not specifically mention Coal Ridge or Ho'opili, but what it says is, be it further resolved that the process of identification and mapping of important agricultural lands also consider agriculturally productive lands within urban growth boundaries that are classified as prime agricultural lands, provided adequate water supply is available. That was what the council unanimously mandated. And I will tell you with certainty that the lands to which they were referring when they passed this resolution were Coa Ridge and Ho'opili. There's no question, because those were the 2 parcels of land that were under consideration for redesignation at that point in time that met the criteria but fell within urban boundaries. And so that is the language to which we refer when we say that the city council mandated Laura Thielen, who was then the agricultural person who was responsible for doing that mapping and for expediting it, to look at those properties, even though the city did not necessarily need to do so under the statute. There was also some mention about the planning for this corridor, and let me just tell you that there's testimony in the record from Tom Kaufman. Tom Kaufman worked for the Campbell Estate for many years and testified that it was his understanding, even when these urban plans were developed, that significant portions of the Campbell Estate lands should be set aside for agriculture and should be kept in production if, in fact, there were farmers who were able at that time, now we're talking about the 1970s and 80s, if there were going to be viable, economically successful agricultural enterprises utilizing those lands. Well, there are. And Mr. Kaufman testified without any reservation whatsoever that it is within the intentions of the Campbell Estate, when it divested itself of those lands, that that land remain in agriculture, notwithstanding the urban plans that were developed back in that period of time that have never been altered or reviewed. Now, frankly, lastly, with regard to this particular matter, this court has, to its credit, placed very high standards on developers and proposals for development which affect the environment. You have required that there be minimal or no impact when we're talking about an environmental impact that is exists, and that was the language that was used in the Superferry case. You've required strict scrutiny in other cases and a high degree of precision when a legislative body or an executive body chooses to take an action that may affect the environment. I ask you whether the Land Use Commission in this case exercised a high degree of precision, whether or not there is minimal to no impact by the decision to allow Ho'opili to be paved over and developed. And I ask you whether or not they have engaged in, and I would ask of you to engage in, strict scrutiny in looking at the record here to determine whether or not it justifies the outcome which we're all faced with, namely the loss of the most productive land in Hawaii. Thank you.
Thank you very much to all of our counsel here today. The court will take this matter under advisement.